of breaking news.
A woman's body was found inside the abandoned home.
A second body was found a few hundred feet away in a trash can.
Neighbors are starting to think the worst after a third body was found over the weekend.
Someone had cut her hair.
We have no death certificate, no cause of death.
Don't you know something by now?
Does anybody care? Does anybody give a damn?
We see her every day wondering, how'd she die?
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Slaughter Sisters. I'm Sharon, and I am going to be doing this podcast alone. Me and Nicole couldn't get our shit together to Zoom this weekend, and that is my fault. So I'm recording on Sunday, so it's Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all you badass men out there who are doing it, taking care of your kids. And also, happy Father's Day to all you badass women out there who are playing both parts. So with that being said, buckle up, bitches, because this is going to be a really weird ride. We're going to go to Lumberton, North Carolina, which is in Robeson County, and we're going to get into some weird crap in this town or this county. So I just want to start with saying that this is a county in North Carolina, and as some of you may know, there's 100 counties in North Carolina, and Robeson is the 22nd most populated, and it also has the greatest prevalence of homicides of the state and holds the grim distinction of one of the nation's most violent rural areas. Young people are twice as likely as those in other parts of the state to die before they come to age. In Lumberton specifically, the chances of being raped, assaulted, or killed are 1 in 55, and that was as of 2016, which the cases that we're going to talk about today, most of them took place in 2017. So that kind of says a lot. By comparison, those in Oxford, which is in North Carolina and is the second most dangerous city, chances are 1 in 88 that you would become a victim of a violent crime. That, I mean, Lumberton, Robeson County, that's a little scary, just saying. Lumberton was founded in the Inner Banks region of North Carolina in 1787 by Officer John Willis after he fought in the American Revolution. Lumberton was a shipping point used for lumber by the Navy. Lumberton and Robeson County as a whole was a destination for settlers of all ethnic backgrounds, white families looking to put roots down in the latest frontier, and free families of color who left Virginia settled there throughout the 18th and 19th century. The area has also long been home to many Lumbees, which is a state-recognized American tribe with about 40% of Robeson County's population identifying as Lumbee. And that's according to a 2000 United States Census report. Today, Lumberton is the most ethnically diverse county in the U.S. More than 60% of its residents are American Indian, Black, or Hispanic. The city and county continued to see significant growth through World War II, but as time went on, manufacturing plants, jobs, and people steadily left the area. To date, Lumberton is home to less than 22,000 people. Lumberton is a very small, very close-knit community. Everybody knows each other. It's family-oriented, and there's a lot of churches there. But also, remember, just seeing a lot of impoverished areas. Nate Rogers, a reporter who covered the deaths of two women that were found in this area, told InsideEdition.com, and I quote, "I just kept hearing the murder rate in Lumberton is unbelievable. A lot of these murders go unsolved and we want answers." More than 30% of those living in Robeson County live below the poverty line, while the median household income is $31,000, significantly less than the national median, which is $59,000. Drugs are the root cause of most of the poverty and also the violent crimes throughout our county, and that comes from Bernice Wilkins, who was recently elected. He proposed creating a dual county multi-agency gang and drug task force to seek out drug dealers at all levels that continue to wreak havoc on their community. So with that being said, I'm going to get into the story. I'm going to start this case out with Abby Lynn Patterson. She was visiting her mother in Lumberton, and that's the town that she grew up in. On September the 5th, 2017, she told her mom that she was going out to run some errands and would be back in about an hour. And Abby Patterson has not been seen or heard from since. Looking back through the town's history, a pattern of young women vanishing in this same manner emerges. Some women have turned up dead in abandoned homes and on abandoned properties. Other young women, like Abby, are just missing. They just vanish. And this leaves the Lumberton community wondering if these are coincidences or is there a predator, serial killer that are stalking their community. So Abby was home visiting her mom in Lumberton. She had just graduated from a drug rehabilitation center in Charlotte. And that's about, well, it's 2 hours from me. I'm not entirely sure how far it is from Lumberton. Probably, it would be even further because I'm kind of like in between. She had completed the program, so she graduated. She was good to go. And she had been discharged into a sober living facility in Jacksonville, Florida. My understanding with rehab facilities is generally when you go into a rehabilitation center for addiction, that they try to take you out of the area that you're familiar with, because that helps with, I guess, the habit of things. Because a lot of times, I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, of course, it's the drugs, but also it's just the routine and the people that you're around. So she went to Jacksonville and she was on her own and she was living her best life, taking care of herself. She had just been accepted to a college where she planned on studying to become a counselor. So she wanted to help people that were in similar situations to herself. Her mother had stated that she praised God for her sobriety and that she put this in her journal every day. So she journaled every day. And I think that's a lot of times that's a part of rehabilitation, is to keep a journal. Abby enjoyed life in general. She was at Holden Beach with her family, posted a picture on Facebook, and she quoted, "Family is forever." On September the 5th, 2017, around 11:30 a.m., Abby had told her mom that she was going to run some errands and would be back in an hour. She had walked out of the house on East 9th Street, and a witness saw Abby begin to walk down the street, and then she was approached by a brown Buick sedan. So Abby seemed to have known the driver by all accounts, and she got into the car willingly. Abby failed to return home, and her mother kept trying to call her to find out where she was at, but Abby's phone kept going to voicemail. Her bank accounts, her social media, everything was untouched and has been since. Abby was a beautiful young woman with long, dark brown hair and brown eyes. She stood 5'7" and she weighed 140 pounds. She was born on February 15th, 1997. So I literally have a kid that's older than her. Authorities found the driver of this Buick and they publicly stated that the person is just an acquaintance of hers and that they picked her up, and they admitted that, and they dropped her off at a secondary location. The name of the driver has been withheld by authorities for whatever reason. So we're going to get into the other cases in the surrounding area, which seems a little suspicious considering. Christina Bennett was 32, also known as Christine. She vanished shortly before Abby. She vanished on April 18th, 2017, whereas Abby disappeared on September the 5th, 2017. Authorities were alerted to a foul odor coming from an abandoned house on 505 Peachtree Street. Once they arrived, they found the body of a female who was naked, and she was wrapped in a gray blanket and stuffed into an entertainment center inside this abandoned house. Their remains had been there for some time as they were really horribly decomposed. An investigator with the district attorney's office named Eric Hackney has been quoted as saying, "It was one of the worst scenes I have ever seen in a long time, and perhaps the worst I have ever seen." So while the investigators were collecting evidence inside the home on Peachtree Street, bystanders continued to smell something strange. They decided to remove the lid of a nearby garbage can and found a second body. A second body. They alerted authorities to the trash can that was located a mere 50 yards away. Court documents state that the trash can had the address of 505 Peachtree painted on its side. And the trash can was the decomposing remains of another unclothed female. So this news spread throughout the area about the discovery of the remains. And a young woman who hadn't heard from her older sister in a while rushed to the area. She frantically was trying to get the officials' attention and was telling them about the tattoo on her sister. The tattoo that she was describing actually was a tattoo that was found on one of the victims. The victim was later identified as her sister, Rhonda Jones. She was 36. She was a mother of five and a grandmother to one. The second set of remains were identified as Christina Bennett, who was 32 at the time, also known as Christine. Upon the discovery of these two bodies, they were sent to the medical examiner's office in Raleigh, where obviously autopsies were going to be performed. And these results were not released to the family or the public for over a year. Over a year, these families had to wonder what had happened to their loved ones. Once the reports were released, more questions than answers arose. Both of these women had been, their deaths had been ruled undetermined because the bodies were so badly decomposed. Rhonda was said to have had cuts to her nose, her forehead, and her chin. This was thought to have occurred post-mortem, so after death, when she was being shoved into the trash can. Jones also had two abrasions on her upper back and a fractured nose. Both women were known to have struggled with substance abuse throughout their lives, and both did in fact have cocaine in their systems. But the medical examiner in Raleigh stated asphyxia injury cannot be ruled out. This type of injury would include someone obscuring another person's mouth and nose or strangulation. Megan Oxendine, who was 28, was interviewed on the news by a local news reporter.
I doubt her nothing. She was just quiet. She didn't really mess with too many people.
She was shaken by it. She was astonished. She walked away from the interview, although she didn't say it to me. I sensed a fear in her from that very moment. Her walking away from the interview thinking, what could happen next? This could happen to any one of us.
I don't comprehend stuff like this too good. I don't understand how somebody could take somebody's child, mother, niece.
Megan Oxendine, the woman that I interviewed about the two previous women, Christina and Rhonda, she was found dead behind home, just 500 feet away from all of this.
It was discovered on June 3rd, 2017. At 608 East 8th Street, behind a vacant residence. Her body was covered with overgrown weeds, tree branches, and roof shingles. She was naked when she was found. So, just like Bennett, and Jones, she was nude when she was found. An autopsy was eventually released, like the results, and once again, her cause of death could not be determined. The report noted that asphyxia injury could not be ruled out, and just like Rhonda Jones and Christine Bennett, she had traces of cocaine in her system as well. Sheila, which is Megan's mother, believes that her daughter had information on the deaths of Christine Bennett and Rhonda Jones, and that is why she's no longer alive. A few weeks after the remains were discovered of Rhonda and Christine, Megan had been attacked. Megan claimed not to have seen the attacker. Her hair had been cut in the process. Megan spoke to her mom that night of the attack, and Megan said that she didn't see who attacked her. Her mom tried to tell her that she needed to contact the local authorities, but Megan did not. However, her mother did and explained the situation. Authorities had, and she never heard back. Sheila, the mother of Megan, has been quoted as saying, "I don't know whether to cry or get mad, because if they would have contacted me, I could have got Megan to talk more and could have done something to help protect her. But now my child is gone." Oh, how awful is that? Cynthia Jacobs is another woman in that area who has been missing since July of 2017. According to her brother, Cynthia was the last person to see Megan alive. So is that coincidental? I mean, let's think about this for a second. You have Christine Bennett and Rhonda Jones, who were acquainted. And then you had Megan, who was acquainted with Rhonda Jones. You have Cynthia, who was the last person to see Megan alive. Not much information is known about Cynthia's disappearance because she preferred to live on the streets. Harry explains how they tried to offer Cynthia a safe haven, but she said no. Cynthia was the last person to be with Megan, and there has to be some kind of connection there, you would think, with the three that were murdered, and with Cynthia. So local authorities, along with the community, feared that they had a serial killer in the area. Local law enforcement contacted the Charlotte division of the FBI and asked for assistance. The FBI canvassed the neighborhood and knocked on over 800 doors. Authorities have stated that they received tips throughout the process, but nothing that would lead to the arrest. Now, currently, the FBI is offering a $30,000 reward for information to help determine how Bennett, Jones, and Oxendine were murdered. Investigators and FBI have stated that they do not believe the disappearance of Abby Patterson is related to the three deaths, but considering Abby vanished, literally vanished, from the same 4-block radius as the other women were found, I find that's suspicious, and it raises some concern with the community. The families of the victims have publicly complained, stating they are not getting the help they desire from law enforcement. Authorities have, however, said that they are holding information close in order to find the person responsible so that they can prosecute them if it comes to be. One common factor in the deaths of Christine Bennett and Rhonda Jones, as well as Megan Oxendine, is that they were all discovered around abandoned homes. And in the area, it shows that a hurricane caused major damage and flooding in the neighborhood where the victims were discovered. So these houses were not, in most of the area, it seems, were not inhabited. Law enforcement had installed bright lights throughout the area to deter criminal behavior. So it's a known criminal hotbed. And as we said, or as I said, because I'm all by myself, in the beginning, Lumberton is apparently, based on the numbers, a super dangerous area. The FBI is offering a $5,000 reward for information leading to Abby Lynn Patterson. They are asking anyone with details to call the FBI's Charlotte field office at 704 672-6100, or you can contact the Lumberton Police Department at 910-671-3845. There is an additional $10,000 reward being offered for Abby, $5,000 from her family for information leading to the whereabouts of Abby, an additional $5,000 in being offered from Mount Terre Farms for information leading to the arrest of those responsible and for the safe return of Abby. So I want to go into detail a little bit on the Lumby people. The Lumby people are known as the people of the dark water. They are the Lumby Nation, and they are a group of Native Americans. And generations ago, indigenous community, they came for refuge in southeastern North Carolina from white settler massacres. They fled to the swamps, and they eventually adopted their name from the river that runs through the swampland. Shatter the Silence members have confirmed at least 31 Native women have gone missing or have been murdered in eastern North Carolina since 1998. So that really says a lot. And I think there's more not only to this story, but more women. And I know for certain, I think it was last year, that a young 13-ish year old girl from Lumberton was kidnapped, and eventually she was found murdered. So there is a lot to this story, and I would love to dive deeper. I don't know about you other podcasters or anybody who's into true crime, but like, you can fall down a rabbit hole really fucking quick and just get lost. I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, but that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I look into this. This is in my home state. I want to see this shit out to the end. All right. Hopefully me and Nicole will be doing this together next week. I mean, it was fun doing it by myself, but I miss her. Check us out on Twitter. We have a Facebook page. We also have a website, slaughtersisters.com. You can search us at Slaughter Sisters everywhere. I'm pretty sure she has an Instagram. So check that out. Until next time. Bye.